This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 24th of January, 1958. The title of this lecture is E-Meter, Identification and Association, Question and Answer Period. This tape is 32 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions. Please note, this tape begins abruptly as did the original master recording.
Yes? Right.
The meter has been doing all sorts of things. Now you get this phenomenon. You're asking the question, says Apple, since you're like I'm in front of your body. The needle was slowly rising. It stops. And then he says, yes. The needle moves when he says yes. See? But every time you tell it to mark it up, the needle will slow down and stop. It never falls, but it is slowly rising. But when you ask him to mark it up, it'll stop.
Yeah, the needle, oddly enough, starts to obey the command, hold it still. As the preclear begins to hold things still, you must not scant his ability to hold everything in the cockeyed universe still. And he does. And the oddity of this scale, keep it from going away, hold it still, make it more solid, is one pursues from the next. They are a gradient scale. If a person cannot make things solid, you can make him hold things still, and things become solid. See, if he can't hold things still, you have him keep him from going away, and he'll eventually be able to hold things still. And we already noticed this peculiarity that when a person starts to get pretty good, and they mock something up to keep it from going away, what happens is simply you get a freeze, and that it actually translates itself straight through to the needle. No, no, that's a null point.
It is a null point.
Oh, yes. You see, your needle is rising. Your null means only surge, or to the left.
Drop.
Falling. You don't want falling. You cannot interrupt rising. You cannot interrupt rising. A fellow's tone just gets higher and higher and higher and higher and higher, and you get a gradual ascension in tone. But what you don't want are these sudden losses, which directly represents unwilling and unknowing association.
I've been working on four pies since yesterday.
Yeah.
But in the keeping them going away, I've got through to holding them still. I've discussed it with my own, that in keeping them going, they were being held still. And in fact, they were getting more solid. And we did note this phenomenon. The needle would not stop. Perfectly still. From the time she said, Margaret,
that's not a needle phenomenon, that's a tone phenomenon. Well, the null is simply, do you get a reaction on the object, which means reaction, does mean reaction. It means a drop. Got that? We have not lost the reactive mind, you know. The reactive mind is still there. It means this object just took a chunk off the reactive mind. You got the idea? This object just took a chunk off the reactive mind. Whatever time it hits the reactive mind, it drops. Evidently, it moves or reactivates a body of resistance, which makes the needle behave in that fashion. Yes?
Would you say something about the relative advantages and disadvantages of the auditor naming the objects and looking for a null object or asking the preclear what to mark up?
It's a 50-50 proposition. There's nothing wrong with the auditor suggesting objects. But the auditor should start suggesting objects when he is getting reaction on those the preclear suggests. That's kind of the general rule on it. Well, the preclear says pork pies, and you don't get any reaction, you're all set. See? He says pork pies, you get a reaction. You say, can you think of something else? And he says cats, and you get a reaction. Can you think of something else? And by that time, he's on some associated chain, so you've got to bust him off of it. And the only thing that's not associated with his thinkingness is the auditor. So it's up to the auditor now. Yes. Yes. It is not harmful. It is not harmful. As a matter of fact, you possibly will even get further by doing so, but it could be a class rule, but it's not an arbitrary Scientology rule. You get the idea? You can suggest objects if you want to, wholly and totally. You can ask somebody, can you mock up a handkerchief? And he mocks up a handkerchief. You get nothing on it. There is a slight liability to somebody who is a bit queasy with his tools. You know, I mean, he isn't used to his tools yet. There's a slight liability on having the preclear start naming objects. You should realize this. Right at the beginning, he starts naming objects, and he names them, and then he gets on an association chain, and it becomes an identification chain. The next damn thing you know, you got a stuck needle. Now what are you going to do? See? You've had it. Well, if you're running the process, and he gets a stuck needle, you're all right. You just carry on. But if you get a stuck needle, if you go up and stick the needle with your own questions and so forth, you're in a bad spot. You just wiggle out of that one gracefully. You know, you could start stacking up a bank on a stuck point. And you got to think fast, Captain Flagg. You got to think fast, for sure. You got to reach back there and find out what the hell question you asked in the first place that stuck that needle. That's probably the only thing now you can run. But you're in trouble. Yes, it's just like you start running locational on somebody and it turns on a somatic. Boy, you've had it. You have no choice but to go on and flatten locational. 50 hours later, you're still saying, look, notice that object. I tell you that there's no arguing with that fact. It's one of these horrible facts. Locational isn't very therapeutic. But it bit. You're not even going to change his profile very much. You know? Therefore, if you have any queasiness about two things, locational or 8C, you leave them both alone. Because if you turn on a somatic running 8C, you turn on a somatic running locational, you've had it. You have no choice but to flatten it. You don't get any place with a case, and months or a year or two later, some auditor picks it up. He sees there's been no advance. Well, it's because locational was not flat, and the case has been hung up ever since. There are several things that can hang up a case. One, locational, biting. Two, 8C, biting and abandoned. Both of those, you see, biting and abandoned. 8C, biting and abandoned. And a PT problem, not cared for. I ran one case back 3 months to an unflattened present time problem. Guy had been audited hour after hour after hour after hour on top of a present time problem. They had been absolutely frantic. He couldn't keep his attention on the session, you know. And auditing became a distractive thing to him. So every time you give him an auditing question, he gets distracted. I had to sort out auditing. There's a rule which you follow, but you can labor this rule too far. And that is to say, if you find your case not, your PC's case not advancing satisfactorily, explore auditing. Not to erase it all or something of the sort, but just explore it. Straight wire him on it. Free him up on the subject. Yes?
Specifically, what would you do if you get a stuck needle on looking for an L object?
Well, you'd certainly have to find out what object it was that suddenly stuck it. Two or three things you could do. You actually could merely pick up the thing that stuck the object and run it. You can have him mock it up, mock it up, mock it up. You're in trouble. I'm afraid there is no good solution. We'll pick one up one of these days. But we don't have one at this time. And I would be leading you astray if I tried to be wise and learned just for the process of being so. That's something that happens, and it's disastrous. If you hit a stuck needle in the process of running some object, you just carry on. But if under interrogation you hit a stuck needle at once, when you're just starting out on the thing and so forth, well, I don't know, you try to unfree it. There are various things you can do. Two-way calm, trying to get some rationality on the subject of the object. You could free it up with some intellectual process, or you could move him off of that point in processing, like come up to present time or something. I can't give you a pat answer because I don't know one. Yes?
In this society, at this time, how long should you let a person be loused up before you clear him?
Now, how do you mean by that?
How much subjective reality should you allow him to have, collect as he goes along through the years, so that after he's cleared, he'll be able to get along with his fellows, his understanding will be fine?
That's an interesting question. That's a social question more than a scientological question. But it works this way. You could probably take some kid, 4 or 5, if I understand your question right, and clear him up most gorgeously, and then find him pretty well out of contact with his environment. He could do this. However, I think he would handle it by simply tangling himself up and coming back at it again.
And with it, he'd have a better ability to untangle.
Oh, yes, yes. This does not produce the same phenomenon, evidently, as old problems. You could run problems of comparable magnitude until somebody realized he was creating his own problems in order to solve them, and then send him out into the society in this state, and he would be so unhappy at not having an agreement level that he would promptly pull in the roof on his head. Well, you don't find him doing this with Clear, fortunately. He has gotten up to a point of ability along the line where he can dub in almost any kind of a social response. As far as lack of experience is concerned, there isn't anybody around at this time who doesn't have a tremendous backlog of it, untapped, just huge, and it's a very opportune time to do so. I don't know that you would have to educate the present generations at all. Well, I don't know that you'd have to at all. I think if people weren't so damned anxious about it, they'd just leave the kids alone. Like probably they'd wind up at the age of 10 or 12 or something like that with their education again. You see, it's an invalidation to teach somebody who knows arithmetic. Now, we don't tell them they know arithmetic. We tell them we're teaching them something brand new. Now, actually, Scientology, we're teaching you Scientology and you know Scientology. But at no time do we let you think anything else, see? It's not an invalidation, quite the reverse. But you teach a kid arithmetic and reading and writing and so forth, and you try to reteach them, and they start resenting your teaching them. It makes them resent the subject, and they get worse at it. And there's no, everybody says education today must be much worse than it used to be because the kids aren't learning near so well. Well, I'll clue you. It's probably much better today than it's ever been, only just teaching them again and again and again has gotten them sour. I know I wound up at the beginning of this lifetime pretty sour on the subject. I could read, write when I was about 3 and a half. And they sent me to school. I thought the people in the school were crazy. I was supposed to sit there all day long and read cat off big cards. I couldn't get the point. I thought they were taking undue advantage of my size. They didn't send me to school easily. It was not without a fight. I hope that in some foggy way answers the question. You bet. Yes.
How'd you clear a kid?
Oh, that's pretty hard to do. It's pretty hard to do. They're pretty goofy. Kids are pretty goofy. One, they're tremendous hope. That is to say, their tremendous future. They have a future of growing up, you know. They've got another chance. This is tremendously therapeutic, you see, overwhelmingly so. So they can look forward brightly to growing up and getting bigger, which is promise of more mass and all this sort of thing. And this counterbalances the fact that they have just been through a rather alarming experience, to say the least. They've just died. And you get these two things in counterposition, and you get a rather odd frame of mind, to say the least. So that you find somebody with a very, very tiny attention span. A very short attention span. You find somebody who is pretty dispersy. You know, dispersals come along rather easily. You find somebody who is easily distracted. And yet somebody who can bounce back when they've been unhappy. And it makes a sort of a complex picture. Now, in trying to get hold of them and do anything with them on a go-for-broke clearing project, and has not been tried, but just out of experience, I would say it would be a rather grim thing.
This lecture is continued on side two of this cassette.
They do so well, by the way, on the little locational processes and that sort of thing, that there's not much use straining at it. For instance, my kids, you'd think, would be processed to death. I found out that very often a child whose parents are Scientologists is not permitted to do what he can do. They're leading him too hard, see, too much strain on it. They're saying, well, he's got to snap and pop, you know, he's got to be a lot brighter, he's got to be way up along the line somewhere. And the kid sort of gets apathetic because he doesn't get they don't ever say, well, we like you just as you are. And they never get just as you are run on them. You get the idea? Well, so I've taken it awfully easy on my kids on processing. Awfully easy. I run an entirely different system. I've noticed some various behavior patterns in my life and usually use those. And that is to say, I always treat my children with courtesy, particularly in front of one another. And rather chomp somebody who's taking care of them for being discourteous to them. And if I notice them being discourteous to each other, then I immediately assume that their mate is being discourteous to them. So I drop on the back of her neck with spiked boots. See? And I think, da-da-da-da. And as a result, these kids are better and better friends with one another. Well, this is very fortuitous because actually their most association is with one another. And they are very polite. They're very polite to one another. They're very polite to people, quite ordinarily, if you've ever met them. Yeah. They're very interesting from this standpoint. Well, that is merely because one is polite to them. You're just counting on the reaction. Now, this is pretty good, merely establishing patterns that they're happy with, see? See, now that's processing in itself. That's processing through livingness. And setting some sort of a pattern where they can get along with each other. Now, they are in an interesting state of mind with regard to processing. They will immediately show up if they have hurt themselves. Now, all kids come around and say, Mama, I've cut my finger, or something of the sort, and kiss it and make it well. Well, this manifestation is a lot different with these three kids. They'll come into myself at once, you see, and get an assist. And they're perfectly happy with it, and the assists are working on them, by the way, faster and faster. So that sometimes it's only a 5 or 6 command assist, don't you see? And they're perfectly happy then. They know that the score is there. We very carefully open up and close sessions and bridge commands, by the way. Much more carefully than I do with one of you guys. All right, now, raising children with the idea that something can be done about it, you see? Now, somewhere up along the line, they ought to kind of start to get clear. They see the things in the usual family environment that cause trouble, you see? They see these things being handled. So they get the idea that these things can be handled, don't you see? You're getting another viewpoint entirely. Now, that viewpoint all by itself makes another breed of cat than a clear. It makes another breed of cat than anything else. It has an effective attitude toward existence. Now, I think, just as I've recounted it, simply because I know these kids better than other people's kids, but I know other Scientologists' kids pretty well, too. They always usually ask for me if they come around someplace. They want to see Ron. They want to come in and give me a smile or something of the sort. That's and I have a good look at them as they go along, you know. And I see them over long periods of time. I see them sporadically, you know. And most of them are doing just fine. But I think they have a different viewpoint than children have ever had before. I think by the time they get to be about 12, 10 or 12 or something like this, you could just whomp into them and clear them up probably in a few hours, and that would be the end of that. Providing you hadn't made them allergic to processing by forcing processing on them, you see, providing you had run good HC on them. Fascinating, the handling of kids, because you're handling a tremendous amount of experience. And about the best thing you can possibly do is set up a model for them. A model of positiveness, a model of politeness. And you set up a good model for them while you got it made. You give them a bad model and you haven't got it made. Processing can have a hell of a time climbing over the top of that, where the person who was processing the child was also setting a very bad example for the child every time he turned around, you know. That would be a rough one. Scientologist with a child has a hell of a responsibility, by the way. It's so easy to use Scientology on the child and completely overwhelm him. You can... Kid wouldn't know whether he was going or coming. You actually could just positively and directly control him and monitor him. Have no kid at the end of it. A lot of Scientologists bend too far the other way, you know. They say, well, a child is self-determined. Well, I'd like to call to their attention as long as I'm making a remark on it. They're not using Scientology. They're using child psychology, which is never control. Never control. That's child psychology, common denominator. Let the child grow of his own responses. Let him abreact out of his, and make all the adults miserable. Well, my idea is adults have rights, too. And the way I keep a kid leading, by the way, is to explain to them that these are adult rights, and someday he will inherit them. And that keeps him leading, you know. It gives him something to go forward to. Of course, I don't know if there are such things as adult rights in this American society at this time, or even the British society at this time. I don't know that. But we're going to have some interesting kids. Boy, there's certainly an awful lot of kids around here. Boy, we got lots of kids there. A lot of little kids. And it's very funny for me to have kids more or less in the same range of all of the younger Scientologists, you know. It makes a whole crew. I don't know what happened to all of the 10, 11, 12-year-old kids that are around. They're still around. I still hear from them occasionally. But there was an age group there, and they're moving on into their teens now. We'll be hearing from one of these days. Of course, the trouble with them is I know two of them that have become more or less full-time professional auditors, about 13 or 14. Yeah. One of them's better than her old man. It's quite remarkable. You know, the academy, can be talked into a course for a kid so easy it'd make your head swim. Registrar, I'll tell you that it's some small fee for children below 18, or there's a fee for children below 18, but the truth of the matter is all you have to do is breathe in the direction of my office, and I'll put the kid through an HCA course. Yeah. Sign him up on a note payable when he's 20 or something. They make good auditors. And we've never had a kid flop yet in that course of any age. We've run kids through that course. I don't know what the youngest one is. I'll have to ask the various directors of processing or training back through the line to find out how young the youngest one was. But I've seen kids in that course of 8 and 9. They're pretty good. They're pretty good. They sit there and knock out the communication line. You'd think they wouldn't be able to take it, but that really isn't the trouble. The only one we ever had any trouble with, his old man was on the back of his neck all the time about study, 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 and school, school, school. And his pop got him so totally sold on the idea that he was still going to school. But this kid is still going to come back here. He's going to come back here this summer. And finish his training, he knows that he didn't make the grade. He wants to come back now. He finally got it pried apart. Pretty wild. Now, I'd process a kid when he was 12, 10, 12, something like this, when he really had a good stability on it, knew where he was going, and clear him. But I wouldn't try to up to that time. I'd process him through living this and this. I wouldn't give him patch-up assists. That's the only other thing we found was dead wrong. You don't process him every time you turn around. You know, you got to give him an assist. You open the session. You make sure that you can and give him an assist at that time. You close the session down. You don't just suddenly walk in and start processing with a monkey and, you know. Gets them upset after a while. You leave them stuck in things. And they get so they don't like this. You wouldn't like it. Well, that's a lot of questions. I suppose we've got time for one more question, I think, concerning your auditing today. Is this about your auditing today? Oh, you can see that connectedness is association of thought with matter and is taking over the automaticity of thought with matter. And it's a slow route, and it's not very therapeutic, but it simply orients the person pretty well. As I say, not very therapeutic. It's not very therapeutic in relationship step six. It's very therapeutic. You know, connectedness is control trio, locational, all of these things come under connectedness. Connectedness is simply the basic version of all of these things. Any question here? Yes?
Now, people can always envisage a better condition that never arrives. These processes are so damn subtle. Would the pre-clear know he was clear?
Now, he will tell you after a while that something fantastic has happened to him. You don't get clear without... Oh, yes, he'll start going for broke on operating Thetan, but he will do this in a very strong line. We have an interesting example of it. I've got it clear in my office, and she's giving us a bad time. She's no longer thinking about her own case in any way, shape, or form. And she's even got a psychosomatic or two that are just dying out because it wasn't done fully, you see. She's just coasting through to the end of it. And boy, she's certainly raising the devil with other people, though. She look at him and say, well, all right, you have a headache. Well, why don't you tell yourself not to have a headache? Huh? Wild. Pretty wild. I mean, quite militant on the subject. Everybody in this operation would simply postulate to do better in the way of the communication line and so forth, it would all happen. Big certainty. There's no doubt about it. Leaves absolutely nothing, no latitude for anything.
How it is, it's true.
Yeah, it's true. True. Yes?
Ron, this doesn't really have to do with the problems I have a question. What are your end goals in Scientology?
What are the end goals in Scientology?
In your particular manga.
Right at the end of the...
We got a 15-minute break.
No, you couldn't cover that in 15 minutes.
That's what we get to know when.
Well, it's time this universe had a self-determined being. I think that's probably the total goal. You can get very funny about this. You wouldn't dare be this critical or this hilarious on the subject. But if you get the idea of this society being totally inhabited by dogs, this is just a funny thing to do, see? The only population of the United States is dogs. You get the idea? Can you get the idea of that? The only being around, that's a Thetan plus body too, you know. All right. All these dogs. Now, level at these dogs all the criticism you level against government, social betterment, and anything else.
Oh, no.
Do it as a mental exercise sometimes. It becomes very, very funny. Here's this collie dog who's president. Now, just level at him all of the things you've been thinking about Ike. The becomes very funny. It's a very funny mental exercise. You can throw yourself into a half a dozen line charges on the thing if you really get going on it. It has been too much to expect that a habitable universe could exist without an enlightened, self-determined being. And man has, on this same cycle I was telling you about the bear hunter, has tended to deify man too greatly. And man has terrific shortcomings, fabulous shortcomings. But actually the shortcomings are quite understandable. It's just that we do not size him up as he is, don't you see? That something can be made out of this is utterly fabulous, you see? But you would have, there is this thing. It is possible to have a society in which beings can be happy and at peace and still have a good time, see? That is a possibility. And people recognize this possibility and then rail at the fact that it doesn't exist. And I'm afraid that has been the wrong approach. The correct approach along this line is to make it possible for it to happen. And that, I think, pretty well sums up my goals. Okay? Thank you. Well, after that, we'll close it off. Thank you very much.